KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Dave Iverson. Next on Forum, the cathedrals of Northern California. Redwood trees have inspired awe from our pioneer days onward. The pioneers cut most of them down, but there are still big trees in parks and preserves, and you owe it to yourself to strap on some hiking boots and get out there to see them this summer. We'll talk about the best hiking trails, what to look for when you get there, as well as the history of human engagement with one of Mother Nature's most beautiful productions. That's coming up on Forum right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro, sitting in for Dave Iverson. This hour, the magnificent redwood trees of California. 200 years ago, they covered nearly 2 million acres between Big Sur and Oregon. Now, not so much, but there are still plenty of grand stands to see, and even today, redwood tree lovers are working to set aside private land that might otherwise be logged for lumber or paved over to build condos. Just a few days ago, we heard a forest in Sonoma County, in danger of giving way to yet more vineyards, was set aside by what some say is the largest land conservation deal in California history. Well, joining us in studio today to talk about redwoods, we have Emily Burns, Director of Science at Save the Redwoods League, and Fred Keeley, Vice President of the Board of Directors of the Semper Virens Fund, which protects and preserves redwood forests in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And then on the phone, we have Mia Monroe, Site Supervisor of Muir Woods National Monument, and Jerry Rohde, redwood historian and author of Humboldt Redwood State Park, The Complete Guide, and Redwood National and State Parks, Tales, Trails, and Auto Tours. We've got a lot of ground to cover. Thank you all for joining us today. Emily Burns, let's start with you. I'm wondering if you can just bring us up to speed on what that deal in Sonoma County was about.
This is an example of innovative conservation that's going on. This had multiple groups coming together to set aside about 20,000 acres in protection status. There will be a conservation easement that will be held by the Sonoma Land Trust, and the underlying fee title, all of the forest and the values that that includes, is owned by the Conservation Fund. This is protecting timberland and preserving open space.
So this is something that I guess I shouldn't be surprised. I know I've seen other headlines like this. There are still redwood stands and groves on private land in various parts of California.
Absolutely. Of the 1.6 million acres of coast redwood forest that's in California today, only 23% of it is protected.
Wow, only 23%? Given how much was buzzsawed in the last century and the century before that one, that's an amazing percentage number.
It is. I mean, in some ways, it's pretty incredible that a quarter is protected. The rest of it is not necessarily at dire risk. It's owned in productive timberland by private industry. Some of it's residential in residential areas. But all of it together is what makes up the redwood forest. And so we look at management across public and private as a continuous landscape and try to get everyone to work together to take care of the redwood forest.
Fred Keeley, your group was involved with this deal. Any thoughts on it?
Well, we were
or this type of deal, I should say.
Right.
Yeah.
We were involved. Semper Virens Fund was involved in a large acquisition involving Save the Redwoods League and others in Santa Cruz County, about 8,500 acres quite recently. And that was previously owned by the Cemex Company, the fourth largest cement manufacturer in the world. They have a plant that they operated for over 100 years making cement in Davenport. And they also have about 8,000 acres of redwood forest that's above that in the watershed. And when Cemex closed the cement plant, then a number of us came together, a number of organizations such as Save the Redwood and the Semper Virens Fund and others. We came together and jointly purchased that property. And one of the reasons we did that, to go to your earlier point about the 25% and what's in public ownership, what's in private ownership, what's in conservation easements, what's in long-term preservation, one of the things we've learned over the 100-plus years that Semper Virens Fund has been around is that simply by buying checkerboard opportunities here and there, That might be a good thing for an iconic grove here, an iconic grove there. But if what you're really interested in doing is preserving the habitat for redwood so that you have healthy redwood forests, you need to do that on quite an extensive habitat scale. And so we do that, Save the Redwoods does that, other folks do that. And that can come about in a wide variety of ways, whether it's purchasing the land outright, whether it's a conservation easement, whether you do what we do oftentimes at Semper Virens, which is that we're the nonprofit friend of the state park system. There's a lot of ways to do it. But the new way in the last couple of decades is to see this as large-scale landscape preservation for the habitat for the redwoods.
So you get the land in hand after mm-hmm. some kind of a deal. Then what happens? Who takes care of it?
Well, there's a couple of different models depending upon the precise nature of that particular property, whether it's adjacent to or going to become part of a state park, in which case it's essentially managed by the California State Parks system, which are just wonderful. They're terribly underfunded and understaffed, but what they do is wonderful, wonderful work. In the event that it is not in the state ownership, we don't, in those cases where we buy it and then the state doesn't take us out and we are holding it for a while, then we and others are engaged in active management of those habitat areas. We'll put in some trails so that folks stay on those trails. We will have visitor serving opportunities there, educational opportunities, but largely it is managing the forest in its natural habitat to make sure that these very complex forests that are not only about the redwoods. Redwoods is where marbled murrelets nest, and they go out to sea and come back, and it's how various parts of the flora and fauna all integrate together in this unique combination we call a redwood forest. There's a lot of very specific habitat management that's involved.
Talk about that, Emily Burns. You are the director of science at Save the Redwoods League. We're not just talking about trees. We're talking about ecosystems.
Yeah, we say at Save the Redwoods League, it takes a whole forest to have redwood trees and to have everything that goes there, including us. We're really a component of the redwood forest as well. And what we're learning is that every single species, whether it's a marbled murrelet or if it's a salamander that lives its entire life up at the top of these trees, they respond differently to climate. They respond differently to what happens when logging occurs. And we have to study each species individually and together to really understand how this forest works and what we can do to continue to save it in perpetuity.
We don't have perhaps as many bald eagles, black bears, and mountain lions as we used to have. Is there any sense of how that's affected the redwood environment?
Well, it's pretty incredible that we're realizing many of these species are starting to come back in the Redwood Range. The Cemex Redwoods property that we were just talking about is a place that's unique in the Santa Cruz Mountains because it is such a large patch of open space without residential homes within it that this is where the mountain lions are coming to den. They have communication sites on this there in the forest, and that's only because possible because it's been left alone as open space. So that's really heartening and gives us a good motivation to continue to protect large blocks of land.
Jerry Rohde, you've largely written about the forests north of the Bay Area, north of Marin. Do you think that the ones that are closer to civilization, as it were, are sadder perhaps than the ones further north?
Well, I think folks up in Humboldt and Del Norte County feel like we've got the champion redwood trees up here, and we're kind of proud, I guess, of that reputation. But, you know, a redwood is a redwood wherever it grows, and an old-growth stand of redwoods wherever they are is going to be an area that people will certainly experience as a unique environment. The thing that worries me is that a lot of these locations are getting overworked. We have tremendous interest in people wanting to experience redwood forest environments, and They come out in great numbers, and you know, especially around the Bay Area, but even up where we are on weekends, you'll find cars just lining the roadside with people anxious to get out on the trails, anxious to experience the parks. And while that is all happening, we continue to suffer these great shortages of funds. And at least up here in our big redwood parks on the North Coast, we have trails that have actually been closed, have been abandoned because the park budget does not allow for those to be maintained.
What's your sense? I mean, it seems like there's a disconnect. If so many people are jamming the hiking trails on the weekend, who needs to be getting out what kind of message to get them to open their pocketbooks?
Well, you know, I think the message is out there. I think organizations like the Save the Redwoods League and local environmental groups put out the message that these parks are not only have they been preserved for many years, but they need to be maintained, and they need to be maintained in a way that protects the resources but also allows public access. But, you know, we've had a problem here in California for decades where we've had budget shortfalls. And when you're talking in the legislature about whether or not you need to have more jail cells, or you need to have stronger law enforcement, or you need to have more schoolrooms, or you need to have more trails in the park, often I think people go to that, you know, that primary concern about health, safety, education, and they overlook the fact that there's actually a lot to do with our emotional well-being, the environment's well-being that needs to be considered also. But I think it often takes, you know, a second row seat in the funding process. So, you know, my advice is that people need to support the organizations that have a presence in Sacramento, that have a strong lobbying force, and they need to be in touch with their legislators about this and let them know that this is a priority that really needs to be addressed, especially as a financial situation changes for the state and it looks like we might have a little more money to do something.
Fred Keeley, you spent some time in the state assembly.
Yeah, I did. From 1996 to the end of 2002, I represented the Monterey Bay Area in the California State Assembly and had the privilege of authoring the two largest park and environmental protection bonds in the nation's history. And so that produced about $4.5 billion for environmental protection and parks throughout the state of California. But almost all of that is for purposes of capital acquisition, which is to say to buy lands, to improve park structures, that kind of thing. The gentleman is absolutely right. The problem for the state is not whether or not there's enough money for capital outlay, which is to say to buy these lands or to build the structures or to build the restrooms or to build the trails. It's really the maintenance and operations, and those cannot be bonded. Those need a permanent dedicated funding source. We currently have Governor Brown appointed an outstanding Natural Resources Agency Secretary, who turns out to be my successor in interest in the Assembly, John Laird, who is now the Secretary of Natural Resources. And when he was in the Assembly and now is Secretary of the Resources Agency, he has had a very good idea, which is to have a fee, a relatively small fee, $18 a year on vehicles for the vehicle license fee. And the denominator is very big, which is to say there's lots of vehicles. And the numerator is very small, which is to say $18. So it produces an enormous amount of money relative to what the park need is. And the State Parks Department could really use that as a permanent dedicated funding source for maintenance and operations. And the gentleman is right, where if you stack up park needs for maintenance and operations and try to compete for general fund money in the budget, you'll never be below people's 7th, 8th, or 9th, or 10th priority, but you'll never make it into the top 3 or 4. So that permanent dedicated funding source is absolutely what we need in a state of 36.5 million people growing by 500,000 people a year.
Mia Monroe, I don't want to leave you out of the conversation there at Muir Woods National Monument. What's your sense? You probably see more crowds than just about any other redwood forest in the state.
That's probably true. Bohemian Grove is probably the most visited forest in the world. And it's a gorgeous stand of redwoods, and we'll probably welcome 4,000 people each day this weekend. And yes, you're very it's a very, very popular place, and we take great pride in often welcoming people to their first redwood experience, their first chance to walk in nature, and also exposure to what national and state parks can do. And it's a huge challenge for us, everything that the previous speakers have been saying. How do we welcome? How do we maintain? How do we provide that experience? And we have a few wonderful assets. One is we have an incredible partner, the Golden Gate National Parks Conservancy, that helps us with fundraising, helps manage the collaboration that we're currently exploring with our surrounding state parks so that we can manage Muirwoods seamlessly with Mount Tamalpais and utilize the ability of Muirwoods to generate funds through our entrance fees to help with that deferred backlog of maintenance as well as provide the experience. And then we also encourage people to think outside the box. Up to 25% of our visitors now take the shuttle rather than getting on the narrow, windy roads and overcrowding and congesting the parking lots. And that's, of course, a real good solution for the future. We also encourage people to not only support organizations like the Semper Virens Fund and Save the Redwoods League, but we also urge them to volunteer. We have a huge volunteer corps that comes in and does everything from trail work to weeding to giving interpretive tours to working with school groups and extending the experience to others. So that's something else that is indispensable, is people actually stepping up and helping not only save things and support organizations, but actually volunteering.
Emily Burns, you've been to Muir Woods, no doubt, and to many of the other Bay Area redwood groves. Do you see stuff happening at Muir Woods that you wish you saw happening at the other parks?
I mean, for me, Muir Woods is the gateway to the coast redwoods in so many ways because it's close to the Bay Area. Many visitors, international, from around our country and in California, come and enter Muir Woods, as Mia was saying, for the first time. They have an amazing boardwalk that makes it accessible to anyone to be able to walk easily under the trees. And it's in a place that is incredibly special in the canyon that it's in, and it speaks to the rich history of California and protecting these amazing places. They bring in children, especially from underserved communities from throughout the Bay Area, and they offer special programs and help facilitate them being able to rent a bus and come to the woods. And that is exactly the kind of thing I would like to see replicated in other places in California.
So we need to get shuttle buses headed to Sonoma County, Santa Cruz County, maybe Big Basin State Park, and the Oakland Hills for that matter.
Absolutely. Yeah, the redwood forests that are still in the Bay Area outside of Muir Woods are also fabulous destinations. They may not have the same number of old trees that Muir Woods does. But for many people, when they walk into a redwood forest, they don't have a sense of how old it is. And they still get the feeling of the peace and the tranquility. And I'm often surprised that even a relatively young redwood tree is still really tall. These are the tallest tree species on Earth, and it's incredible to even go into a small forest for the first time.
And this is already the second or third growth that you're looking at.
Absolutely.
You know, Rachel, I think that raises a really interesting point that is I don't know if it's a dichotomy exactly, but it raises a really interesting point about redwood forests. Folks look at these redwoods and they go, oh, my God. Goodness, you know, several hundred feet tall, some of them several hundred years old, some of them older than that, the older growth, second growth, whatever. They're really old. They're really magnificent. They're really fabulous. And at the same time, what folks like Emily, who are scientifically oriented as opposed to me, I'm an elected official, and we won't go into what orientation that might be. But the issue is this, is you have these big, massive, wonderful, spectacular, inspiring trees, and yet the habitat in which they live is so fragile. There is a reason they only grow in a band from, you know, Oregon to Big Sur, you know, a couple or 3 miles wide. And that's because of the fog, the soil conditions, all these things. And so you can lose these forests in a variety of ways. And one of the major challenges these days is a very slight change in climate, and you lose the whole redwood forest. So how it is that we can prepare for and deal with climate change in this environment is critically important, because simply buying them and not logging them on as intensive a basis as we have over a couple of hundred years isn't per se going to save the redwood forest.
That's a very good question. Emily Burns, putting this back to you again, we've had a lot of interesting research coming out of UC Berkeley, coming out of Humboldt State University, looking at this question of, you know, whether the coastal fog, can we hope for it to continue existing? And the climate change study doesn't necessarily tell us what we expect to hear. It could be that there might be more fog coming up in the near future.
That's absolutely right. There is uncertainty about what's going to happen with fog along the coast of California in the future. It's a water source that comes in during the summer. We have a Mediterranean climate. It's usually warm and dry unless this fog rolls in. And that's a time of the year when we're not getting a lot of rainfall. What we know is that the trees use fog as water, as do the other plants in the redwood forest. I found that 80% of redwood forest species take in fog water. And they can do it even by just taking it in through their leaves. The fog doesn't even have to drip down into the ground, which is pretty handy for them. And we know it's important. It keeps temperatures low. But we've seen it decline over the last century. Fog frequency has gone down by about 30%, and what happens in the future is still fairly a question mark. But what we do know is that temperature is going up. We've been seeing temperatures increasing throughout California and around the world, and the Redwood region is no exception. And what's going to happen as temperatures continue to increase is it will drive more water out of the system. That means evaporation of water out of the soil, and the trees will be, you know, think of them like sweating more. And what we need to study and what we are studying is, what does that mean for the trees? How much warmer can it get before there's a problem? So far, we're really happy to report that we haven't seen any drought-induced mortality. The trees haven't been dying yet, but we need to keep careful watch and keep studying these trees so that we catch the very first signals of how they respond.
Can you see them marching towards the Oregon border, perhaps growing north because that's where it's colder?
There's been a lot of thought that perhaps the climate to the north is more favorable for redwoods as our climate in California is changing. I think that's a possibility, but we are talking about really long-lived species. Mm. This isn't a bird species that can just fly next door and find a better place to live. These trees will take a long time to establish and to grow to be almost 400 feet tall. So we're not going to see that in our lifetimes.
Any thoughts on that, Jerry Rohde, as you're listening into this conversation?
You know, in addition to the global sorts of effects we're seeing on the environment, we've had more localized effects over the last 150 years up here on the North Coast, because there's been a tremendous amount of removal of the old growth redwood forest. And even though we have probably the greatest concentration of old growth forest anywhere in the state, still standing here in Humboldt County, we've still lost a tremendous amount of that initial old-growth environment that was just logged and can't regenerate, you know, quickly enough to return us to a condition that we had 200 years ago, where these large stands of old-growth forest lined all of our river canyons and encouraged the fog belt as it moved in from the ocean. And I don't think we still have a real handle on what the long-term effect of that is. You know,
with that, I should tell our listeners, we are talking about California redwood trees, the glory, the grandeur, the delicate balance between human and arboreal needs. We're going to take a short break and come back, and we want to hear from listeners. What's your favorite spot to see redwoods? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Whatever your mode of communication, we're ready for your comments. We'll be right back. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Myra. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Myro, sitting in for Dave Iverson. We're talking about redwood trees with Emily Burns, Director of Science for Save the Redwoods League, Mia Monroe, Site Supervisor for Muir Woods National Monument, Jerry Rohde, redwood historian and author of wonderful guidebooks, and Fred Keeley, Vice President of the Semper Virens Fund and a former state assembly member. And, you know, I want to ask everybody, starting with the folks on the phone first, to just name one of your favorite redwood trails. Jerry Rohde, seeing as you've written the guidebooks, do you want to start us off?
Well, it's really tough. There's so many of them. But I think if I had to name just one for folks, say, coming from the Bay Area, it would be the Prairie Creek Trail at Prairie Creek Redwood State Park. That's about an hour's drive north of Eureka. And it just goes through a beautiful forested canyon. You have a lot of riparian vegetation. But what is really most striking about it are these enormous redwoods that just come from the creek side and then grow up the hillside. And you just pass dozens of trees that are over 300 feet tall, and you are aware of their presence in this way as if you're entering a sort of sacred site, I guess.
Wow, I'm taking notes now. Mia Monroe, what's yours?
Well, it is in Muir Woods, and I urge you to come early, early in the morning. Our gates open at 8 a.m. to walk quietly among the redwoods up to Cathedral Grove, breathe deep there, stand among the thousand-year-old trees, and appreciate not only the peace and quiet of Cathedral Grove, where the United Nations started, but also the nation's first place dedicated to peace and quiet. Continue up the trail to Fern Creek, a major tributary. Pause and see the other visitors to Muir Woods, the ladybug clusters. They're all over the rails and ferns there. Head up Fern Creek to Alice Eastwood. Head down the spur to Bootjack and meet Redwood Creek, and then go and return via the Hillside Trail, which is on the hillside slopes, and it gives you a chance to actually look down into the forest, appreciating the height of the trees and glimpsing over to the canopy, and then head back to the entrance through historic Bohemian Grove.
Beautifully put, Fred Keeley.
Well, Semper Virens was founded in 1899 by Andrew P. Hill, and that led directly to the first California State Park in 1901, which was the establishment of Big Basin as the state's first state park. So I should say that it's Big Basin. However, my own personal favorite is at Henry Cowell State Park in Santa Cruz. When you go to the visitor center, there's a wonderful, very flat, 0.6-mile loop through the redwoods. If you have not been there before, have not been to Redwoods before, one of the things that's so wonderful is it's very, very accessible. It's flat. It's folks in that use wheelchairs, older folks. It's really wonderful. But I will tell you, if you have never seen a little guy, a little boy or girl, actually see a redwood for the first time with their grandparents or parents or an aunt or uncle or whatever it is, that is the place to see that, because you can take little guys on that hike and they don't get exhausted, and it is really something to see that, and you immediately get the intergenerational responsibility we have for preserving redwoods.
Emily Burns?
Everything the guests have described are my favorite places, but I have to give some credit to Montgomery Woods in Mendocino County. This is a spectacular redwood forest that's sitting, it's hidden in a bowl in grasslands and oak forests. And as you drive west from Eureka, you'll find the trailhead. You will huff and puff up a hill about 5 minutes, and you will walk into a cathedral that will take your breath away. It's really unusual in the area, and spectacular old trees. And the bottom of the forest is flooded during the winter, and you'll see newts crawling around with orange bellies, and the ferns are taller than me. Truly spectacular.
It sounds awesome. I'm going to have to listen back to this segment so that I can take all the notes. You know, we asked our listeners on Facebook why they visit redwoods, and here are a few of the responses. Iwana wrote, because whenever I'm next to one and think about how long it's been standing there, it reminds me of my place in the universe. Mm-hmm. John wrote, because Ronald Reagan once said, a tree's a tree. How many more do you need to look at? This many, Ronnie, this many. James wrote, because they exist, barely. Fred wrote, because I need a deck and a sauna. And this, you know, this launches me into a little bit of a history lesson I thought you guys might join in with me on. you know, redwood lumber is wonderful stuff. There's a reason why the Victorians turned to it to build San Francisco the first time after the gold rush and then again after the earthquake and fire. That's why they raised all those redwoods in Oakland and beyond. And I'm wondering if we can play a little bit of an educational film from 1946 that gives a sense both that folks knew they were looking at something fabulous and they wanted to use it in a different way than we might think of today.
Their history goes back millions of years to the time of the dinosaurs. But here at the sawmill, the redwoods are just big logs that have to be unloaded into the mill pond. Trainload after trainload comes to the mill to meet the huge demand for redwood in this country and abroad.
So, you know, it's still true today. The lumber is awesome, beautiful stuff. Emily Burns, do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I have to say that the redwoods were actually around before the dinosaurs. and part of the reason why they've been so successful since then and up to now is because their wood is decay resistant. It has all kinds of chemicals in the structure of the wood itself that keeps it from being attacked by disease. So whether the tree is alive or it's fallen to the ground or it's been turned into a deck like the one I grew up on, it sticks around. And even when it's wet, it's a really hardy material, which makes it great for pulling carbon dioxide out of our atmosphere. So in our forests or in wood products, it's locking up carbon dioxide. It's part of the carbon solution for global warming.
And these days, you've written about this. We have a new problem, or maybe it's a new old problem, is that people find the wood so beautiful for things like coffee tables and, you know, sun decks that we have poaching going on. People are poaching the burls from off the foot of the trees.
That's right. The burl is the tissue that is at the base of the tree, and it's what allows the trees to reproduce. It allows it to create sprouts that will grow up and be the next generation of trees that are clones. And if you look at burl wood, it does have a swirling pattern, and it's attractive to people. Unfortunately, there are individuals that are doing criminal activities going into our parks and cutting out this tissue, and that severely damages old trees. And really, that's another threat against the redwoods that we didn't realize. We might consider a park a protected place. We did our job. We saved the redwoods. But no, it takes constant vigilance to make sure these resources are protected.
You know, Rachel, if I could comment on that, this is Fred Keeley from Semper Virens. A couple of points on that. One is the person who represents our area in Santa Cruz and Monterey counties in the House of Representatives, Sam Farr, has a great phrase on this. He says, "Everybody in my district loves redwoods. Some of them like them horizontal, some of them like them vertical." We say everybody loves redwoods. And that really is the dynamic tension, is really what's the right mix there. We know that 100 years ago and 200 years ago, clear-cutting redwoods, especially that old growth first stand, cannot be replaced, has all kinds of devastating impacts on the forest and so on. Simultaneously, redwoods are to some extent like weeds in the sense that they just pop right back up. They grow like crazy. But we can't harvest them with the same aggression that we did for a couple of hundred years there. They existed for millions of years. We go in and harvest them very aggressively for a couple of hundred years, thus threatening their very existence. I don't think there's very many people who work in the redwood space, whether it's Save the Redwoods or Semper Virens or state parks or others who work in that area, who say there should not be any redwood harvesting whatsoever, period. People understand that there will be, and B, healthy forests to some extent can and should have some amount of very, very responsible timber harvesting. I think the issue is that we have, I think in the last 20 years, really found that balance is very limited amount of harvesting, very responsibly done, and mostly what you do for a healthy forest is try to conserve and enhance its habitat values.
You know, this leads into a question from Bruce, who writes, "What is the current status of the Pacific Lumber Company, whose hostile takeover and plundering sparked Redwood Summer?" Those were mass protests in 1990. Could you speak to that, Fred Keeley?
Well, I actually cannot, because for two reasons. One is Semper Virens works only in San Mateo and Santa Cruz counties. It might be a much better question for the folks up in the north part of the state.
Jerry Rohde, do you want to speak to it?
Yeah, well, when the Maxam Corporation and Charles Hurwitz were running Pacific Lumber Company, it was all about maximum profit for the company as quickly as possible. And so they went in and cut every old-growth tree that they could get their saws on, and pretty soon they ran out of old-growth redwood. So now we have a new company from Mendocino County that has taken over the old Pacific Lumber Company. They have no old-growth forest left to cut. They can go back and start cutting second and third-growth forests on a limited basis, and that's what they're doing, and it appears that they're doing it responsibly. But one point I wanted to make is that when you start cutting second-growth or third-growth trees, the wood from those trees is not going to be the same quality as old-growth timber was. It takes a number of years, 200 years or more, is my understanding, before a old-growth tree develops those true characteristics and before the wood has all of the characteristics that people used to want so much. The very tight grain, the beauty that you see when you have paneling of redwood, you don't get that right away in a forest where you're cutting trees that are maybe 100 years old or less. So there's, I think, going to be kind of a self-limiting effect here that people do not want the timber that's being cut now, or they can't use it for the same purposes that they did when they had trees that were 1,000 years old that were being cut. And those just aren't there anymore. There is no privately held old-growth forest to speak of, and the only old-growth timber you have right now is in the parks.
Well, with that, let's turn to the phones. Rebecca in San Lorenzo.
Good morning. Thank you for saving the redwoods. They are so important to all of us, I think. And we have ones that we have growing in our backyard that are over 40 feet tall that we planted from seeds. But I think that the old growth, there's nothing more important than saving those, because there's something like wisdom that we can get from walking into an old growth forest. We could all learn from those ancient trees, and we don't have, 2,000 or 4,000 years to wait for those. We need to save them as they are, every single one of them. And I know that wood is more beautiful, but the trees alive are what really counts. And if you haven't been to Prairie Creek, did anyone mention that one? It's an awesome experience.
Jerry Rohde, you want to comment there?
Yeah, well, I think Prairie Creek is definitely one of the highlights for people when they come up here. But, we have to remember there are many, many of these parks, and many of them much closer to the Bay Area for people to visit. But I think, the point is that you can find old-growth forests in a lot of areas, and it doesn't take thousands of acres to give you the redwood forest experience. But I do hope that at some point in people's lives they have a chance to come up and see a grove like the Rockefeller Forest or one of the groves at Prairie Creek, where you have several thousand acres of old growth in a combined environment. That's an overwhelming experience.
And Jerry Rohde, just for those folks who are taking notes, Prairie Creek is located where?
It's on the coast north of Eureka. It would be about 320, 330 miles north of San Francisco, so it's a good day's drive to get up there.
Well, let's keep plugging along. We've got Cole who writes in, "I will always have a fond love for Armstrong Woods." Linda writes, "There's a wonderful redwood grove at the UC Botanical Garden in Berkeley for people who have a hard time getting to Muir Woods or more remote locations." And another listener writes in, "Redwood Regional Park in Oakland is a great place to commune with the redwoods. They're 100 to 150 years old, but the park is great, and the silence in the redwood grove is amazing. It's hard to believe you're in Oakland." I think you could speak to that a little, Emily Burns.
Yeah, I think Redwood Regional Park is a gem that people don't recognize in the redwoods. I've worked there myself. I study ferns in the forest floor. And yeah, if you walk up through the redwoods and you catch a peek out, you're looking down at Oakland. You're looking down at the airport. You can see across to San Francisco. You really are truly close to the heart of the Bay Area.
Pretty darn amazing. Yes, Fred Keeley.
On that point, I think there's something very interesting there. On one hand, it is very, very important especially for folks in the urban and suburban environment, to be able to have that experience in a grove here and a grove there and a grove somewhere else as their sort of initial way to fall in love with redwoods. And so whether it's Save the Redwoods or Sempervirens or others, finding these iconic opportunities around are really important to do. Equally as important is, as people fall in love with the redwoods because they see a grove here and a grove there, for the actual redwood forest itself, for all of these redwoods, it is critical, as we've gone from a rural, agricultural, sparsely populated state in the 1850s to having 36.5 million people, 70% of whom live within a 1 hour's drive of the coast, which means 70% of them live very close to redwood habitat and place enormous pressures on the redwood forest habitat, that we preserve those in a way that has great connectivity. That means that we are not doing it in a checkerboard fashion, but instead we're doing things like Sempervirens is doing right now with our partners, including Save the Redwoods, where we're trying to put what's called a great park together in the Santa Cruz Mountains in Santa Cruz and San Mateo counties, working on a very, very large landscape basis, because we have learned over time with folks like Emily and other folks with a scientific orientation that if you do it in this checkerboard way, you really are going to lose the forest. But if you do it on a conservation basis, on a landscape scale, you really can, in fact, preserve the redwood habitat, and it needs a big scale preservation in order to really intergenerationally preserve these redwood forests.
With that, let's turn to Lou in San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi.
I am calling with an interesting twist on the preservation methods. With all the great schemes that are kind of coming along to geoengineer climate change and uptake carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, I recently became aware of an organization that is cloning some of the largest redwoods and trying to spread them all over the world in an effort to sequester carbon in them. As an ecologist, I have a lot of concerns about that, spreading species and creating areas in other places. And I wonder if you guys are aware of that and my comments on that effort.
That's a good question, Lou. Emily Burns, from the checkerboard Fred Keeley was talking about to polka dot tree planting or tree preservation. What do you make of that?
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the things that's amazing about redwoods is that people love them, they're inspired by them, and they have been planted around the world for horticultural reasons, for plantations. A lot of redwood timber actually comes from outside of the United States now. And they're being planted now for this other reason. I also can have concerns about what it does to local ecosystems when you bring in another tree species. Redwoods do need a lot of water, so they will start taking a lot of water out of your soil. So that's something to be aware of. And they get really, really big. So if you're planting close to your house, that's something to be aware of. I think when we clone redwoods, this is something that's been going on for decades. And it's been used by the timber industry to select for specific traits that make good lumber. We have to think about whether we know what will be the right trees for the future. So if we take just the few redwoods that got big and old and clone those, they were successful in the past, but I question whether they're the best, most vigorous set of genetics for the future. And maybe letting natural recombination and reproduction of redwood trees, that might give us a new novel combination of genetics for the next generation that might be the best. So it's a question in my mind.
Well, at Sempervirens Fund, this is Fred Keeley speaking, for Sempervirens Fund, the way we look at that issue is this, is that since we've been around, we've preserved 34,000 acres of redwood forest in Santa Cruz and Monterey counties, planted 93,000 trees, helped construct and maintain 60 miles of trails. We are really focused on having redwoods grow and thrive where they grow and thrive, as opposed to making them the new exotic invasive species in somebody else's area of
touring
the
rock stars
of the,
of the arboreal world.
And so our view is that issues around carbon sequestration, carbon sink. Redwoods are a wonderful, they take up a lot of carbon and really are a very, very healthy and vibrant part of trying to deal with climate change. Our thought is keep them where they are, preserve them where they are, have them serve that multiple part function. We're actually rather dubious of the idea of spreading them around the world where they don't naturally grow.
Mia Monroe, do you want to jump in there?
So at Muir Woods, we really try to let the ancient forest thrive on its own and respect the natural processes of flood and wind throw, and let that rejuvenate the forest naturally. After those catastrophic events, that's when young redwoods come up. And so one of the big messages in our park is to be in awe of the tall, old, ancient trees, but also to appreciate the whole forest, including the cycles of death or what we may perceive as disaster, because that's how the forest rejuvenates. And then, of course, one of the key things that Emily mentioned is our system of trails. One reason that Muir Woods continues to stay beautiful and hopefully the trees are thriving is because people walk through the forest on very clearly defined boardwalks that bring people a little bit above the soil to protect the precious earth, and the experience guides you through the groves and a variety of viewing opportunities, and it allows the wildlife to live naturally, which really thrills people. But by really carefully cultivating that sense of respect, we're also letting people know that the forest needs to be protected from trampling or erosion or theft or graffiti or litter or careless fires or whatever. So we feel like where most people have their first experience, like a place like Muir Woods, that's where you cultivate that sense of respect and also that sense of that scale that we are visitors in this incredible forest, and that it will take active care on our part if they're to live in the future. I also wanted to mention another thing about our boardwalks, because they were a very important choice in the park to protect the soil, which of course is key to the redwoods having the healthy soil and flow of water. But we use recycled redwood as an example to people that if they love redwood for lumber, there are conscientious choices that starts with the selection of recycled wood or wood that is harvested in a sustainable way. It then moves to taking good care of your furniture so that it lasts a long time, and also our paths are as small as possible. So rethinking, do you really need a large deck or a large structure? You could maybe do it a little less and therefore put less pressure on the wood. And so these are very, very active messages. We feel that in a park, not only do we talk about the trees and about the forest and the salmon that they support and the refuge for spotted owls, but we also talk about the contemporary messages of climate change or sustainable practices and how to recycle or use less and have a healthier world that way too.
Well, with that, let's turn now to Andrew in San Francisco.
Hi. I fell in love with redwood so much that about 20 years ago, my wife and I bought a house in the first valley north of the Russian River, a little town called Casadero, which I think was mostly cut down to rebuild San Francisco after the earthquake, but there are now 100-year-old trees. We have about 18 on our property, and I was just curious about what people thought about little communities in the redwoods, built of people who love to live in the redwoods and want to keep them there.
Well, Mia Monroe, do you want to jump in there?
Well, we are very proud of, for over 100 years, being neighbors to Mill Valley, Sausalito, Larkspur, and having not only Muir Woods, but the GGNRA, the Golden Gate National Recreation Area, be a national park next to a major urban area, and having people be able to have a national park experience or a redwood experience as part of their everyday life. whether it's where they take their children on the weekend or celebrate big events or take healthy walks. But we also feel like we have to relate very closely to our community so that the pressures of an urban area, whether it's the influx of weeds or the congestion on the roads or the lead of the lightscape into the dark forests, there's many, many things that happen being next to an urban area. So, you know, I think this isn't answering that person's question directly, and maybe Emily would, but I feel like our biggest responsibility is how we can encourage as many people to be outdoors and appreciate as much as possible and how to do it sensitively and work very, very closely and collaboratively with our communities and YMCAs and schools to bring people in and understand the value of these places. There's nothing like visiting and a close relationship to inspire respect and awareness and then that next urge to protect and take care of. And how do you not get into fragmentation and the challenges of little communities and parks?
Well, that sounds a lot like a closing statement, Mia Monroe, and we are coming towards the end of this. So I just wanted to offer the opportunity for all of you to sort of give a last thought. Jerry Rohde, do you want to urge us to head north, I take it, of the Bay Area?
Well, yes, I certainly would. You know, if people have time to spend a weekend at least or a week up here, you can really experience the greatest stands of remaining old-growth trees and go to several parks and I think have what could even be a life-changing experience. The one other thing I wanted to add is we've been talking a lot about people in the parks and the way they experience the parks, but we have to remember that our first concern here is the ecosystem itself and protecting that and making sure that regardless of how many people come and visit, that we maintain these old growth stands and that we allow regeneration to occur as much as possible on cut over lands.
Thank you so much, Jerry Rohde. You get to have the last word on this one. Thanks to our guests, Emily Burns, Director of Science for Save the Redwood Leagues, Mia Monroe from the Muir Woods National Monument, Jerry Rohde, a Redwood historian and author of wonderful guidebooks, and Fred Keeley, former state assembly member and vice president for the Sempervirens Fund. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai with online support from David Marks. I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny.
Funds for coverage of California state parks are provided by the S.D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation. Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.